I was wondering if there are any questions or comments or concerns left over from either last night or this afternoon. We had an interesting discussion this afternoon with Munzel on is alcoholism disease, and you didn't get, weren't any of you there?
Yeah.
You were there, yeah.
I wondered how I got the book published.
No. Not he as in Munzel, but he as in the person that,
yeah.
Well, the bottom line is they don't know. And that the term disease was always used as a sort of metaphor. I mean, it doesn't fit some of the usual categories like a flu. I mean, it's not carried by a virus. And, you know. So this author had gone to great lengths to refute the disease concept without ever defining disease, and saying in the process that the whole medical paradigm needed to be taken off. And in some ways he's right, except I don't think that he replaced it adequately. What he said is that alcoholics can control their drinking, and we need to force that control back upon them. And it seems like it can, even though he doesn't exactly say that, it seems like it can easily slide back into the old moralisms and the sin paradigm and all of those things that just didn't work. And I think in anything that is this problematic, what you do is you go with what works. And whether philosophers can put together a philosophical framework into which it fits or not, if it works, you go with it.
On the other hand, you know, like you're teaching us the 12-step approach to dealing with arrogance.
Mm-hmm.
Surely you wouldn't. I mean, you certainly don't need to think of arrogance as a disease in order to deal with it with the very same approach that you're saying we should deal with alcohol abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And so it seems like to me that to look at both of them in kind of the same way is helpful. That it's a problem. You'd be happier if you don't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And disease, I think that in alcohol, in AA circles, disease was always seen in its spiritual component, with its spiritual component, with its emotional component. The physical aspects of disease, which is what the book refutes, was never, I mean, in the beginning, it was never even considered. In the last few years, just because hospitals have gotten so involved because of insurance and all kinds of other reasons, they've needed to try to prove that there is a medical component in order to keep insurance money coming. And so then we've gotten off on that. But that was never the intent, to say that alcoholism is like tuberculosis or something that people catch with a virus and can take a shot to. I mean, not, I don't know, how do they cure tuberculosis now? They do.
And I still have the tuberculosis.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But you're saying that it could slip back into the old moralism. I mean, it's arrogance. That we slip that into a moral bag if you feel inclined to, or you can mm-hmm. just see it as a, mm-hmm. a defect or whatever, you know. But mm-hmm. in other words, unless you're saying, you know, let's just not slip things into this sin bag, which seems fine with me, but it's an odd thing for a weekend.
Well, and if we have everything that's short of an attachment, I mean, at some point something happens where you're hooked, right? If something happens and you end up hooked, and that could be hooked to alcohol, it could be hooked to a God image, it could be hooked to a self image, you could be hooked to all kinds of things, and the withdrawal, I mean the severance takes a power greater than yourself to do. Mm-hmm. But short of the hooking, we do all kinds of things that fall into the same category, but they're choice. Does that make sense?
No.
Yeah. If you use I think it's more helpful maybe to use the metaphor of slavery.
We're in bondage to sin.
Yeah, yeah. And that's a biblical image or metaphor. And right, we're in bondage to sin and we cannot free ourselves. Now that's, you know, there are certain kinds of things that we just really can't get out of by ourselves. And some things we have choice of. I mean, we all know that in our lives. That sometimes we can make reasonable choices about whether I'm going to tell a lie or not tell a lie. You know, you can choose to do it or you can choose not to. And if you choose to do it, that's a sin. But there are some things that for whatever reason, you just don't make choices about. And those are the places where God needs to intersect in our lives and free us. Does that make any sense?
I understand.
Yeah. And we all have those places, and they're different for all of us. And with the alcoholic, because it's alcohol and because alcohol alters behavior, it's a very noticeable thing. It alters behavior sometimes in very dramatic ways. So the people pay a big price for that behavior alteration. You know, if an alcoholic sat in their room and drank by themselves and didn't have any family and, you know, what's it hurting? But most alcoholics drinking hurts people beyond themselves.
I think the difficult thing in addiction and attachment to understand is the issue of choice.
Mm-hmm.
Because as long as one is free to make choices, it's extremely difficult to understand why someone can't make a choice in a particular behavior
mm-hmm.
or attachment. Because if you're free to make those choices, then you can make the choice whenever you want to make that choice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But if you've gone beyond that and become involved in the addictive cycle or the attachment cycle, then it will take something beyond yourself and your own choice to make the choice not to do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be an intervention from the outside or some kind of awareness or force.
Yeah, the program, and that's all such jargon, and yet it works. And this is something that's problematic enough that you take a pragmatic approach, and what works you go with. And it works. What has not worked is telling alcoholics that they really do have control, and that they really can make choices, and that they really are free to take a drink. And that they ought to be able to do that, and so go ahead. That has not worked. Maybe it works in one or two cases, and in 99 or so, it doesn't work. Anyway, any questions from last night or comments? If not, we'll plunge on to the 10th step. We've been trucking right along here. As I may have mentioned, at our church we have this program of 12-step groups, which is designed to help seekers find emotional well-being and spiritual renewal. And as we were thinking about how to adapt the AA and Al-Anon model to our church in a way that would more clearly reflect our faith heritage, one of the things we decided to do was to add a paragraph to the welcome. And we adapted that, the welcome from the Al-Anon welcome. And the paragraph reads, "We also share a common belief that there is a God who cares for us, suffers with us, and wants to give us the Spirit. The Spirit will produce in us love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. And we pray for ourselves and for each other that we would be given the Spirit sufficient to meet our need." Now, these are the gifts that will give us the kind of life that we can live as created in the image of God. In connection with that, I wanted to share with you the text for today, which is from the 14th chapter of John. And it reads, "Peace I leave with you, I do not give it as the world does. Do not be worried or upset, or in a different translation, which I like better, let not your hearts be troubled. And we all know what a troubled heart is. Let not your hearts be troubled. Do not be afraid. 12-step groups are, at their core and at their best, the antithesis of self-help groups. Self-help groups are based on the assumption that we have within us the skill and the ability to fix ourselves and each other. 12-step groups are based on the assumption that we need to quit our attempts at self-help that have been so frustrating and left us in despair and accept God help. These groups operate on the principle that we all have within us a deep need to be reconnected with our Creator, to plug into the source of all energy, to be revitalized, to be renewed by letting go and opening up rather than by hanging on and fixing. Jesus says that he doesn't give peace as the world gives it. How does the world give peace? Through struggle and control and negotiation and through fixing. Jesus gives it through the Spirit. And it's the Spirit that gives to us those qualities that make life worth living. And I want to read, in fact, join me. Many of you, I'm sure, know these. We have them now on a big banner in the front of our church. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. The 10th step in the 12-step way of walking through life reads, and I have it up there, we take a personal inventory, and when we are wrong, promptly admit it, and when we are right, we thank God for guidance. Now, those of you who are AA people are going to say, wait a minute, that's not the 10th step, and we'll talk about that later. We've done a little addition here. This step suggests that every day we be alert to the red flags that go up inside of us, flags that would alert us to the fact that something's wrong with our spirits. In other words, whenever we're not experiencing the peace that Christ has given us, that whenever we are not in a position to accept that gift, then something is askew. And there are all kinds of ways that our body tells us that something is askew. We have all these little red flags that go up. And those are the things that the 10th step tells us to note. And so that we can look at what's going on and do something about it. We've talked about the other steps, and we've used the metaphor of a house that we have left uncared for years and years, and the cracks in the foundation and leaks in the roof. And actually, I'm describing our house in Iowa City. It was just a disaster before about a year ago when we decided we'd better do something about it. And that through the process of the first 9 steps, we have gone through that house and done a top-to-bottom house cleaning. We've called in the pros to crack up to spackle the foundation, and we've called in the roof people to put on a new roof, and we've turned our house over to the people that knew how to do the fixing, and we've done as much as we could do by cleaning out. So all of a sudden, we have this freshly painted, clean house from top to bottom, cupboards, drawers, closets even. The 10th step is a way of daily housekeeping. And if we live the same way we lived before, the house is going to get in the same place that it got before. And so we have to change the way we live. And that involves this daily inventory, just taking a look at ourselves every day and seeing what's going on and doing a check on where we are. I was thinking about during the time of our son's addiction, the kinds of red flags that were going off in me that should have alerted me to something, that something was wrong with my spirit. But it didn't, because I didn't know anything about any of this stuff. What I said about it was, why, of course, this is an absolutely normal response to this kind of a situation. Of course, this should be going on. One of those things, I used to get little nervous tics in my eyes. And whenever I'd go anyplace, I'd always sit like this, just to cover them up, because I just didn't want people to see them. So I'd always be sitting around like this, trying to keep the stupid things from going, you know. Have any of you ever had them? Oh, they're just awful. Sometimes they'd start around my lip, and so I'd be sitting like this. Really bad. Most of the time I engaged in frenetic activity. I mean, I look back on those years and think about how much I got done. It's just absolutely staggering because I just went so fast most of the time. All of the time I had a lump in my stomach, and I didn't know there was another way to live. And sometimes it would be just like a pebble, and then sometimes it would just become boulder-like and absolutely consuming and heavy, but it was always there. And I didn't know that one could live without that. Much of the time I was very judgmental and blaming, mostly of myself, but then when I got sick of blaming myself, I would lash out at the principals and the teachers and the coaches and his friends and, you know, everybody I could think of that wasn't doing their job with that kid, you know, that's the drug pushers and, oh, geez, I had a list from top to bottom of people that I struck out at in that kind of judgmental way. Another thing that I had going, and I always felt like I was the only person, in fact, I never even admitted this to anybody until in one of our Shalom groups, a young man was talking, and he just, in great embarrassment, admitted, you know, and I thought, oh my gosh, you know, I used to do that too, all the time. I had a fantasy life going. It was like a soap opera in my mind all the time, and I could click into it at any time I needed escape from the reality of my life. And of course, I was the star, I was the heroine, wonderful things were happening, I was successful, and this soap opera just kept cranking away up there, and I could just click in anytime I wanted to, and it was wonderful. It was a crazy craziness, but it was an insanity that kept me sane because it gave me an escape world. I didn't have time to watch the soap, so that's probably what I would have done. And also, I sort of like to think, I mean, I like to think of that as just the writer's life. You know, I mean, writers always do this, don't they? But it wasn't being creative, it was being crazy. Another thing that I did was to spend an enormous amount of time reviewing the past, just like an archaeologist, just rumbling through the remains of my past to see what I had done wrong, sifting through, looking for clues. Inordinate amounts of time in the past trying to figure out what I had done wrong, how I could possibly have screwed things up so badly that we could be in such a horrible mess. And that just that obsession with finding the cause, the reason, you know. And that should have been to me a clue that all was not well, but I thought that was an absolutely normal response. I didn't know there was another way to live. And when I would see people who were in situations that were difficult and they seemed to have a serenity about them, I approached that, I viewed it with great cynicism. I was sure that either they were wearing a mask, covering up, you know, what they were really feeling, or they were somehow such Pollyannas and in such denial that they really didn't know that their life was hell, you know. And I wanted to tell them, you know, so they could be like me and verify my existence, you see. Now, much of the time I live without any of those symptoms. Now the norm is a feeling of well-being, a feeling that I never knew was possible up through that stage of my life. And the red flags that I use, that trigger to me that something is askew, are a feeling usually of heaviness, just feeling heavy. You know, we have this daughter, not the two wonderful ones that are here that I never worry about. The other one that I do occasionally worry about. And I get off the phone and I feel heavy. And I feel heavy because I'm taking her life back onto myself and I'm not trusting her to make decisions that she has to be able to make. There are other kinds of things that, that come. Sometimes I just get rushes of anger. Several years ago, we had an inclusive language fight in our church, and I don't know how many of you have gone through that. And anyway, the good guys lost. And so we ended up, those of us who care about such things, having to sit in church and listen to all these he's and hims and whatever all. And most of the time, I got my serenity about it, and I was not going to let that get to me, and I wanted to be able to worship in that congregation and really worship and not let that bother me. And the rest of the worship is wonderful, and so most of the time that's okay. One Sunday I was sitting in church, and I don't know what overcame me. I think there was a lot of references to man and he, all the exclusive human language was just rampant in the text. And I just became filled with rage, and I couldn't shake it. Just absolute rage. I wanted to stand up and scream, you know, just scream in the middle of the church service. And, you know, that's a craziness. And it took me probably about 4 days to calm down. And the sad thing is I went to my Shalom group, which is supposed to be this place of serenity, and I was telling them, I'm just in this rage, help me with my anger. And I told them what I was angry about, and it made them also angry that we you have every right to be angry about that. Let's do something. Let's form a committee. I said, no, wait, that's not what this group is for. But that happens. Every once in a while I go into just a depressive cycle, and some of that is just a part of the creative cycle, and sometimes it isn't. Sometimes it's a spiritual thing that I really need to take a good look at. So those are my red flags now. What I want to do for about 10 minutes maybe is to get into little groups of three and share what kinds of red flags there are for you. What are the things that happen to you in your body or wherever that let you know that something is askew? And then we'll make a big list, okay? This is not necessarily you, but maybe you have a friend that gets migraines or, you know. but let's come up with a whole list of the kinds of things that ought to be our little signals that we need to take a look at what's going on inside of us, okay? Okay, groups of three, people you don't know, preferably. Where should we start? Should we start over here? What kinds of things do you come up with?
We came up with stomach disorders. I mean, those are
sleep.
And that can be not able to or having nightmares.
Okay, stomach disorders or gastrointestinal disorders, sleep disorders, yeah. Anything else?
Well, I think that's enough.
What's yours? These two would never have a problem. Go ahead. What did your group come up with?
Aching joints.
Huh?
Aching joints.
Yeah, just aching joints all over.
Aching.
That's right.
The tics that we had talked about before.
Tics, yep.
Stomach.
How do you spell that kind of tick?
T-I-C.
What?
T-I-C.
T-I-C, okay.
No K on
here. No K. What other things?
That's another problem.
And then the old breakout in the face.
Oh, breakout in the face. Anything else?
Tightness in the chest.
Oh, tightness in the chest. Yeah.
The red ears.
Yeah, red ears. Yeah. Sort of like Buddha.
Yeah. That inability to breathe deeply. Yeah, that's a real.
Lower back pain.
Lower back pain, yeah.
Excessive eating.
Well, that's just what eating.
What about biting the nails? You see a lot of people with hardly any fingernails.
Eating could be either way, not eating at all or excessive eating, yeah. Okay, any others?
Headaches.
Headaches.
Obsessing.
Obsessing. Got a variety of things, yeah. What else?
Cleaning my office.
His secretary always knows we're in big trouble when he goes to clean his office. Well, I do the same thing, and you say always to me, Mary, sit down. Mary, can't you sit? Mary, can't you sit? And finally, no, I can't sit. I'm madly cleaning the house. That's always something going on.
Well, that would be sort of obsessing, right?
Yeah. That's a part of that, yeah.
Yeah, part of it.
I noticed my sister, she'll wash her hands repeatedly 50 times a day.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh. Sometimes. Yeah, there is. Yeah, I just can't remember what it is, but I noticed that. And
Anything else?
On irregular sleep patterns or...
Yeah, sleep disorders of one sort or another, yeah. What other things?
Isolation.
Isolating yourself, yeah. It would fall in there somewhere, yeah. Are any of you shoppers?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Did you think buying something? What?
Leave your credit card at home.
Yeah.
For a lot of people, that's
a lot of women do that.
Yeah.
What about the exact opposite of isolating? Getting yourself too involved with
Oh, sure.
Busyness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What was one of the things we were talking about here? Judging other people?
Oh, ours was more, now those are all physical.
Yeah.
Anger. We were discussing
anger.
Mental.
Yeah.
Anger mm-hmm. or resentment mm-hmm. towards somebody who had maybe done something in the past, but keep returning to that where it isn't justified, really.
Yeah, you just can't let it go. Yeah.
You just dig it up and keep working it over in your mind and resenting it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very unproductive.
What about making lists?
Oh,
yeah.
She's
making one.
Yes.
Yeah.
You mean lists of things you have to get done?
Yeah, you have to get done.
List, to-do lists.
To-do lists, yes. That can sometimes be a reasonable thing, but sometimes it can be,
You spend 45 minutes making the list and only 10 out of the hour working.
Yes. Then you're in trouble, yeah. Other things from anywhere? What? Eating, yeah.
You talk about drinking too.
Yeah.
Somebody might have a glass of wine and drinking to
himself. Sure. Well, everybody has a glass of wine before supper, so I'll have one, and then, well, everybody has a glass during supper, I'll have one. Well, everybody has a glass after supper, I'll have one. Well, everybody has a glass in the evening, I'll have one. Well, everybody has a glass before they go to bed, I'll have,
Well, or if you just have, if once in a while you have a glass of wine, and then all of a sudden one night you have two or three, if we're looking for those signs, mm-hmm. and signals later on, you're going, I wonder why.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's sort of like maybe that there's something going on
signaling.
People get in the car and just go, they drive.
Yeah,
they don't
you're driving fast.
Oh. Where are you going? I don't know. I'm just going.
I have been spared a multitude of accidents. My guardian angel works overtime.
Impatience with yourself.
Impatience. How about self-pity? No,
a pity party.
A pity
party. Yeah.
Right.
Let's all feel sorry for ourselves for a while.
Yeah.
Nobody else will.
Yeah. That's always a good one. Cutting people off, putting them down, putting other people down, I think is a very common one.
Happens and we're not feeling very good about ourselves.
Yeah. Anything else you can think of? Looking over my little.
A lot of people are kinks or
sexual appetite. Oh, yeah. We play out all kinds of things in the arena of our sexuality. Yeah.
What about conscience? Is that like a internal flight more than an outward flight?
Well, either way. I mean, when we start obsessing about guilt, you know, guilt is a flag, you know, to do something. And guilt... Guilt is often a very good flag. I mean, all of these are good flags, actually.
Healthy.
Well, you see, in treatment centers now, they don't have... There's no healthy shame. There's healthy guilt. They've divided between guilt and shame, but shame is the bad stuff, and guilt is the good stuff.
Those of us that know about shame.
Yeah.
Well, what is healthy guilt? Is that...
Well, if you've hurt somebody...
Justified, I mean...
Yeah, if you've hurt somebody, you ought to feel guilty. Anybody with a conscience and with any kind of love and caring, and anybody that's human, is going to do things that hurt the people around them. And if you do that, you ought to feel guilty. And you ought to do something about it.
And then you would make amends.
And then you'd make amends, right. Unhealthy guilt is a guilt that we carry for, you know, all the stuff we've done in the past, that we can't do anything about, and for everything that anybody else has done, and for everything that the world has done, and for what the slave traders did, and for what, you know...
What about being too religious?
Ah, yes.
That's a...
What'd you say?
You know, for some people it becomes a club and they beat people over the head with it.
Yeah. Religious fanaticism, I mean, any kind of fanaticism is a real flag that something's going on. Anytime you insist that you're right about something, you need to say, whoops, you know, what's going on? Why do I need to be so damn sure that I'm right? You know, why can't I give an inch? There's something going on inside that you need to think about.
Well, I think in that religious realm, too, I think there's an escapism sometimes in terms of, instead of it being a spiritual, a help to the spiritual journey, escaping into the reading or the Bible study or the same kind of thinking or the music that is almost obsessive to the point mm-hmm. that, you know, you're ignoring your kids, you're ignoring other people, you're just kind of into this mm-hmm. thing to keep you going, and it's giving you the high, or it's giving you whatever it is. It's, mm-hmm. it's almost an addiction in a sense.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it can be very much so, yeah. Or obsessing over religious questions. You know, is there a God? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Can we put that on a volunteer basis?
Yeah. Simple irritability. You know, when you just find you're just... I mean, sometimes that's lack of sleep, and sometimes it's perfectly normal response to, you know, you're really hungry, you haven't eaten for a while. I mean, it can be all kinds of things. But if you're just irritable, and there isn't a good reason for it, then you need to take another look. Okay, I'm going to erase this now, but you can keep these all in mind. What'd you say, constipation?
You said it's a Lutheran problem.
Oh, yes, we've inherited it from good old Brother Martin.
Did he have that problem?
Brother Martin? Well, that's what people say was his whole problem. If he had just had a good laxative, there never would have been the Reformation. I'm going to learn. I'm going to learn.
No,
I'm
going to... Yeah.
Okay, we're just going to tell you.
Good, healthy sex life. Do we have that on the tape? Jane tells us that Martin Luther... You're sure he wasn't doing a power trip with his sex? I mean, what is a healthy sex life? Tell us.
In the 16th century, it might have been quite different.
Oh. Maybe we should do some more reading. Okay, I want to tell you about a code that they have in Emotions Anonymous, which is a group for people who have mood swings that seem really out of control. And I think they do some really nice work. And they have this catchword, halt.
And what it means is anytime you are hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, that you should stop and take a look at what's going on. And so this would be the time when you would do your 10th step, do an inventory. Now, I think that the only way to make that a practical term is to think in terms of each of those letters as being an umbrella term. So that hungry would in fact indicate any of those empty or needy feelings. You know, and many of those things that we had up there were just empty, needy feelings. Needing food, needing intimacy, needing affirmation, needing success. All of those things that we need and we just kind of worry about and feel anxious about because we don't have them. Angry involves a host of attitudes toward God and self and other people, and included in that would be all of those things like blaming, resentment. What were some of the other ones we had up there?
Rage,
putting people down. Do you remember some of the other ones? All those kinds of feelings of just wanting to strike out and be angry. Lonely would refer to all of those kinds of feelings that make us want to withdraw, feel depressed, feel in despair, helpless, hopeless. Just that sense of just this life just is not worth living. And so all of those kinds of feelings we could fit under that umbrella term of loneliness. And then tiredness, which is a physical symptom, I think we can put all physical symptoms. So the eye tick and the headaches and the gastrointestinal things and the acne and the, you know, the all physical things, if you think about them as under tired. And so then you can remember the term halt, and it can be your kind of catchword for going through the day and catching yourself when any of these things start to happen. And you don't have to keep all these things in mind, because as I'm sure you know, you yourself fall into very predictable patterns. You know, you don't have all of these things go wrong. You have one or two or three of them that just repeatedly happen. Whenever you recognize one of these red flags, label it immediately for what it is. It's an inner problem. It means that something is askew with your spirit and that you need to stop. It might be necessary to go back to the first step, which is the admission of powerlessness over something. You know, when I think of my daughter, that's where I need to go. And to the second step, which is trusting God with that life. And it might well be the problem of trust. I mean, the worry and anxiety and all of those kinds of things are a faith issue. Those are all faith issues. And we go back to the second and third step, where we turn our life over to God and we let go. The problem might be that we have really done something wrong, that we've hurt somebody. And so we do a fourth step inventory. We do a check, you know, a spot check. What have I done? You know, whom have I possibly hurt? And we confess that we have in fact failed. We've failed through all kinds of different ways, and we've already talked about that in another session. Maybe it's that we need to do our eighth and ninth step, which is to make amends to somebody. Maybe something is just eating away at us because we've hurt somebody and we need to make amends before we can go on with our life. All of these things are signals that we need to go back somewhere along the line in our spiritual life and tend to something. Whatever it is that it is, it's blocking us from shalom, from that peace that God has promised to give us, the peace that Jesus has promised when he said, "My peace I give to you, not as the world gives it. I give it to you so that you never need to be worried or afraid." Tomorrow at 10:45, we're going to be doing the 11th step and just a little smidgen of the 12th step. I thought I was going to be doing 10 sessions, and I'm only doing 9, so it'll just be kind of a little crash course on the 12th step at the end of the 11th step. At that time, we'll talk about some of the ways in which we can turn ourselves once we've flagged this feeling, once we know what it is, and the ways that we can get ourselves back into a position of serenity and a position of joyfulness in the world. For those of you like Radar who are saying, what's that extra phrase doing on the 10th step? The real 10th step is simply, but for those of us involved in the spiritual renewal, using the 12th step for spiritual renewal, we also thought that there ought to be a positive thrust to it. So we do a personal inventory, and we also see those times when we did something that was right. And we can rejoice in that. And we can rejoice because God has given us the strength and the guidelines and the energy and the whatever it takes to walk a path that in fact is a good path. And it's not an arrogance. It's just a wonderful warm sense of self-love and a wonderful feeling of gratitude for just being. It's a sense of cherishing ourselves in the day and rejoicing in what we see that's beautiful, what we see that's glorious, and what we see that's good all around us. And so we add that on to the 10th step as a way of keeping the focus both on what is negative and on what is positive. And that there is much in our day that we can just really and truly rejoice in. And that needs to be a part of our inventory, what we look at. Any comments or questions? We're just about out of time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, and that's strongly stressed in the 4th step, and then in the 10th step, which is sort of a mini 4th step every day,
yeah.
It's like they forgot
the
good part.
And the 12 steps... Yeah.
Only as necessary. Just quite a bit. Well, okay. Time to go to... wherever it is that we're going.